It's hard enough to create a vision for your business or your life, let alone hold on to it. In this episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast, we're talking with Martha Beck about accountability and holding that vision true for you. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Martha Beck. She is the author of many books, including one of my favorites, Finding Your Own North Star, and more recently, Finding Your Way in a Wild New World. She has been a columnist for the Oprah magazine since its inception, and is just an all-around great human being. That, of course, is just my opinion on that, well, that last aspect, but that's my opinion. I'm sticking with it. Thanks for joining me, Martha.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
So as we talked off air, I am trying to spread some information about the different ways that in business that people do coaching as a business model, consulting as a business model. So you are probably undoubtedly one of the more well-known, particularly in the life coach area, folks that have been doing this for a period of time, and really probably in some ways have established a lot of the credibility of the industry in general. So I'd love it if you just kind of talk a little bit about your model, and feel free to delve back into your history or whatever you want to cover. But I know that people will find it really instructional to kind of hear what you're doing, what your approach is, what you've built.
Okay. Yes, I was born on a snowy day. No,
it was a Tuesday, right? Yeah.
Yeah, skip to the part where I actually started doing this thing, which I did not call life coaching. I was teaching at business school at American Graduate School of International Management. And that school, because it's international, it has a lot of students who are they're there to sort of see the world. They're there to have a life experience and not so much focused on business. So I ended up talking to them about things I wouldn't ordinarily have. Like if I'd been teaching at Harvard Business School, where I'd done a lot of research, I would never have gone off into this odd thing of counseling people to do odd things with their lives. But I found it really, really enjoyable. And, you know, I remember sending one student, telling her not to take a final exam, but to go out into the desert for a day and a half and come back and tell me what she experienced. And these business students were kind of loving this unorthodox approach. And they started hiring me outside of class just to give them advice on their lives. And I was like, well, hell, that beats working. And then I actually read in the newspaper that I was a life coach. And I thought, oh, and I didn't have, my business approach was completely scattershot. I just started doing what I really loved for people who asked me to do it. And then I had so many clients come to me that I ended up writing it all down in the book, Finding Your Own North Star, thinking, this is wonderful. They can take the book and they'll never come back, and I can just get back to being a writer and a professor. Well, the book made things way worse in the sense that I had now hundreds and hundreds of people who wanted to work with me, and I ended up creating a coach training program just to supply the demand. So it's kind of a business person's dream come true. You do what you love. People just start asking for it in droves, and it ends up becoming a replicable model. I've taught a lot of people to follow that model. For me, it just sort of literally fell out of the sky. So good luck with that, everyone.
Well, so tell me, so what's the model look like today then? So you talk about you have, I know you have master coaches or people that you call master coaches now. Are those licensees, or do you train them in some manner, or are they just kind of groupies?
I love that. Probably. I hope not. The way I train coaches is literally, I will teach you to live your own life, because I really don't believe that anyone can know the direction of another person's life, especially right now where everything is so variable. You know, my youngest daughter is just graduating college, and she's doing a job that didn't exist when she went into college, right? And it's internet-based. So with so much change, I kind of go to this premise that you have to kind of steer your way by this inner compass, to use the prevalent metaphor. And so that's what I teach coaches to do. So the idea is they will find out who they are specifically. And then there's that great quote from Nelson Bowles, your mission in life is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And that's just a really nice way of framing supply and demand. But that's what we look for. You know, where is there that particular coach? There are a few tools that you can use that are, that will help other people read their internal compasses. But really, your only job is to get enormously clear yourself and then become, just enough to help somebody else become clear. So I have this pattern of coach. They can come in for a 6-month training or an 8-month training to become a basic coach. And if they really want to go on with it, they can enter a 1-year training to be a master coach. I don't have a lot of those. And then the organization kind of formed organically around the coaches that wanted, for example, to structure a business. My CEO loves being a CEO, so that's why she's my CEO. So it's very organic, and I would really encourage people to be creative and self-attentive while they, if you're doing this kind of business. Really, 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 it's such a cliche, but follow what you really love. Yeah, and so, that is really the only thing that works.
Yeah, so there is not the Martha Beck way that people come in and become, you know, very attuned to.
No, in fact, you know, a lot of people told me that I should franchise, that I should, you know, create a stable of coaches, and it actually goes against my basic working philosophy. But it also goes against what I think is the business trend of the 21st century, which is smaller is better.
Yeah.
Small, lean, specific, targeted. If you get a big bureaucracy, it's kind of a sitting duck in today's economy. Things do not do well as big, bloated clumps anymore. You're much better off having a micro-entrepreneur. Micro-entrepreneurialism is in its absolute glory days right now, and the people who are doing something that no one else can do are the ones that are thriving.
Yeah, and of course, the one of the more popular words today is pivot in business, and I think that that's another aspect of that, that
yeah.
2 years from now, when whatever it is that you were doing doesn't exist anymore, you're able to shift gears on the fly. Do you still personally have one-on-one clients that you coach?
Every now and then. I mean, I like to sort of develop new tools and test techniques. So I think odd clients, like I will work with somebody who's like in a rural town in Africa, or I will work with a billionaire. And the question is, what's fascinating is they both need the same things. Because my whole premise is if I'm going to teach something as a tool for helping people live their lives better, it has to work for everyone. And that's something I really got drilled into me at Harvard, where I did my doctorate. They kept saying, look, if you're going to make a general principle, a sociological statement about something, it has to be applicable across the board. So I really, it's developing the actual content that I do when I have individual clients now. Yeah. I'm actually testing my product and making it more powerful.
So it's your laboratory.
That I love.
Your laboratory, so to speak.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. It's very much a kind of investigatory research. I was taught to do research to make sure things work.
Yeah.
So, but I don't coach just to like get people through the day, because I have such wonderful subsidiary coaches who do that.
Yeah. So you also still put on a fair amount of, I don't know if I would, what's the best way? You call them workshops, maybe almost retreat type events, though, right? Where I know you have one coming up for, I think you call it the Wayfinder Workshop. Tell me a little bit about that approach from a business standpoint and maybe from the consumer standpoint, too. I mean, in some ways, is that, you know, sort of locking yourself away for 3 days to focus? I mean, is that a better way to make progress in some ways? Or and then from a business standpoint, is that something that you really enjoy doing?
Yeah, I really enjoy it, and it's a great way to give a product to more people in fewer hours by having them join as a group. And then the biggest thing is that I discovered the reason retreats and things exist, and they exist in all cultures, even like pre-modern cultures, is that a small group experience, because of the way our brains are formulated to respond to small groups of others, that's really how we evolved. And so you can have, if you can get someone to go kind of split off from their usual patterns for a couple of days and then be integrated with a small group, if the facilitator is doing it right, what happens is that the person can make more progress in a day than I could do in a year of private sessions. Really, they do. So, for example, one of the things we do is interact with horses. We go to the ocean. I mean, we do all these interesting, we make fire. And they're all things based on evolutionary biology, which is kind of my research background. And the idea is, how much change can we create in a person's life in the shortest amount of time? It's like, it's almost like a game. How much positive change can we make in one retreat? And that, for me and my facilitators, that's the joy of it. And I, for the customers, it's that you come out of it a different person.
Yeah, I know. In my own experience, you know, it takes me half a day to shut off all the noise. You know, so I kind of need those big chunks of time if I'm going to make any progress, because otherwise, I'm, you know, an hour session, I'm fidgeting through most of.
Yeah, and there's something about, I mean, if you're just one on one with a trainer, it's very, very minimal compared to what will happen to you if you're with a group of like between 12 and 20 other people who are integrated with you in the same experience. Mm-hmm. It's massively powerful. And I know this from things that happened to me in my life, you know, that 4 days spent doing mediation training completely changed the way I interact with everyone. Hmm. So I love doing that sort of, like, how fast can we set somebody free from their, from whatever's got them stuck?
Yeah, and I think there are other examples, people that participate in group meditation and group yoga and group exercise and group running, you know, of all kinds. I think there is a dynamic of you know, something about groups, and we can go as deep or as you like to in that, but I think there really is something powerful about that.
Yeah, we're social apes.
So I warned you I was going to just throw some, I was going to shift gears.
Yay.
And throw some coaching type softballs. That's really what they're going to be, but they're...
Oh, you good. Know. You can play hardball. I'm fun with that. I love it.
They're the kind of questions that I hear all the time, and I'm certain you hear way more, because they really, you know, are the kinds of things you write about and deal with every day. But so I'm just going to throw them in, and you got to give your, you know, these are going to be sort of high level answers, I think, because these are high level questions. But I'm sure people come to you all the time, and particularly related to your book, Finding Your Own North Star. You know, how do I find my North Star? How do I figure out what I want to do when I grow up? I mean, even people that have owned businesses for years are still asking that question.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really simple. It's the game. You're getting warmer, you're getting colder, but you play it with your body. And that most people in our cultures denigrate sort of the body and elevate the mind, but actually the part of the brain that is operating your whole body is far more intelligent than your cognition. So you just look at any experience, like if you looked at your list of things to do today, and you had learned to pay close attention to your body, you would notice a physiological response to each thing on your to-do list. And we are taught to ignore that. We're given a list, here's your school schedule, now go do this and apply your attention equally in all areas. And if you don't want to do it, we don't care. So we learn to go sort of numb to the signals from the body. But I mean, and because I never coach in generalities, I always coach in specifics. I'm going to use you as my guinea pig, okay?
Yep.
So think of three things you have to do for the remainder of the day. What are they?
I have writing that I have to do. Oh, I have a tax return that I have to review.
Uh-huh.
And I'm speaking to a group of my consultants for about an hour. Those are my three biggies.
Okay. So it's very simple. You imagine doing the tax return. And just notice without any judgment what happens in your body.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
My shoulders and chest are tightening.
Okay, so any tightness means that is not your North Star. think about talking to the consultants, to the marketing people for an hour.
Yeah.
What happened to your body?
I feel really joyful. Is the best way to explain it.
And what does that feel like physically?
Physically excited. The things you would kind of think, you know, commonly talk about. You know, more energy, more. I'm sitting up straighter, even talking about it, things of that nature.
Yeah, it's incredible how susceptible we are. We show huge, measurable responses just to words being put in front of us, say in a crossword puzzle that psychologists have faked to make to do an experiment. Even the words related to things that are painful for us make us physically slower and more tight. So, I mean, I came out of 12 years of a chronic pain illness that nobody could cure, and I just started doing things that made my body feel better, and in the process found out that my body was a really good guide, and then figured out that everyone's body is a really good guide. And it sounds so simplistic, and the mind says, no, no, it can't be that simple, but I swear to God, if you just keep doing more of the things that make your body open and sit up straighter and feel excited, and less of the things that make you feel tight across your chest and shoulders, your whole life is going to change, and it's going to change in a really good way.
Yep. All right, let's move to another great great one that I'm sure you get all the time. You know, business owners, particularly the line between, this is probably true of everybody, but I see it in business owners, the line between what they call work and what they call life is non-existent anymore. Mm-hmm. And but we still sort of, you know, some of it maybe is because society tells us we need to have this, or we believe we need to have this this idea of balance. And I do have to give you before you answer that that idea of, you know, how do I find work-life balance, your column this month in O Magazine talking about the writing space, that covers kind of this work life, you know, giving yourself a workspace and a true home space. I actually do a ton of writing, and I find sometimes if I just slouch on the couch and get my laptop, I can slug out some words, but I'm not very creative. And so I have an actual room that's pretty much, you know, our kids have all grown now, so I have a room that's pretty much all I do there. And I went and I found this artist, a woodworker, who had taken a maple that he cut down, a maple tree that he had cut down that had some disease in it, and he created this incredible writing desk and chair, and that has a whole story behind it. And when I sit in that chair, I can honestly say I am a far better writer. When I read your column this month, of course, people go out and get O Magazine and read Martha's column. But when I read your column this month, it just really brought that to mind. So I had to tell you that story.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you. And it's absolutely true that things about that particular chair, the story you've told about the chair in your own head, and I mean, there really are physical situations that are more conducive to working well and to working in balance. And again, people neglect those. I was the first one to neglect it. And I had three kids while I was getting my doctorate, and I just decided to give up sleep. And you know, that makes total sense from a rationalist point of view, but it turned out to be very unbalanced and not good for anybody. So you found this little place where you can go into a mental state. It's what they call a state-dependent memory. When you're sitting there, the writer kicks in. And then when you go slouch on the couch and your kids are jumping all over you, that's a completely different stage of your life. And what I teach people to do is to give equal value to all of the things they love. And it's so interesting because it used to be harder for women, but it's now harder for men. Men have actually been given less permission to do the things they love than women right now. So a lot of women are out there going, well, do I love this? I don't know. I'm going to try this. And okay, and how do I balance that with the kids and everything? And in the meantime, I get guys that I'm coaching where they figure out, oh, what I really want to do is be outside. And then they have to go home and have a fight with their wife, because the idea is that men should still be machines that sit at their desks and work. And I think that what you're doing, finding a place, even the thing of the tree, we now know that the brain works best the way it evolved, outside with all five senses active, moving. So the closer we get to that, the more effectively we can balance work and life. And if you love doing something that you think isn't your work, and you've given up doing it, your work will suffer. Mm-hmm. Really, if you start to cut off pieces of yourself, you can't bring yourself to your career. You have to have the guts. All the best things that happened to my career happened while I was skiing. All of them. There's something about getting in that zone, and you can call me woo-woo if you want, but there is something about being in the zone of things that bring you joy that radiates into your work. It makes you go faster. It makes you more efficient. It draws people toward you. It's like all the world loves a lover. If you're doing the things you love, that's how you balance your life. You do what you love first. You know, life is short. Eat dessert first. Then you just become a far more productive animal, because we are not factory cogs. We are animals. And animals need to be happy.
So you just teed up my next question that I hear frequently. I am doing what I love, but I'm not making I'm not making enough money.
Right, absolutely. And that, I think, is, I had this conversation last night with somebody I was coaching. I think people who feel that way are maybe not tapped in enough to what's happening right now in the world in terms of the ways there are to make money. For example, I mentioned my daughter she was going to go to graduate school, but she just was spending too darn much time drawing things on the computer on commission for the fans of this online epic. And so she started just taking commissions to do art online for fan art. Hmm. Okay. That kind of just drifted into her lap. So now people are giving her real money to do that. People are giving each other real money to do things like, people give me real money to go out into the woods with me and teach them how to be happy. There is still an industrial basis for this society, no doubt about it. There's farming and production, but the vast majority of what were the white-collar jobs are being completely transmogrified. There is a completely new way of connecting with customers, and you have to go into the way it's happening. You have to be able to use the internet. You have to be able to find the tribe, as Seth Godin calls it. If you can find 1,000 people who are interested in what you love to do, he says in his book Tribes, you can support yourself. And I've helped like hundreds of people do that. And there are so many people who hate the internet, and I'm sure there are ways to do it without that too, but I'm telling you, you have to just let go of the old ways and start exploring the new opportunities for that combination I mentioned earlier. Where does your deep gladness meet the world's deep hunger? Because using these technologies, you can find those 1,000 people, and they will give you enough money to live. And it tends to grow from there. You know, you get 1,000 happy people, you're probably going to end up with 10,000 happy people.
Yeah.
And in a world of 8 billion, that's not asking a lot.
That's right. All right, so I have one more kind of coaching question. I see this a lot. Everything's going really well. I'm happy. Business is okay, but it's been okay and okay and okay. And I seem sort of stuck. Like the last, I had somebody tell me this exact quote. You know, the last 4 years I've done exactly what I've, you know, did the year before, and that's okay. But, you know, why, you know, how do I get off the plateau?
And I talk a lot in his last book about taking a leap of faith. And the okay plateau is, you know, it's a fine place to be. So you don't have to jump off until, I always tell people, don't jump off that plateau until you're really ready to take a leap of faith. Because what you're going to have to do is think of something that you would love. And the only reason you're not doing it already, because you would love it, is that you're anxious or downright terrified to do it. So take a flying leap into something that would just be radically fun for you, and add that to your business model somehow. And obviously we can't go through every scenario, but if you get creative and there's something you love, I'm going to use you for a guinea pig again, okay?
Okay.
What would you love to do? What's on your bucket list that you've never done before, or that you used to do, but you've stopped doing it because you grew up and became responsible?
I used to spend a lot more time in nature. And I find myself not doing it anymore. And I have, for the last few years, in fact, wanted, you know, sort of, I can't say desperately or I would have done it by now, but I have wanted to take some of the people that I coach and consult and create, figure out a way to create a an outdoor experience.
You know, does that sound really that impossible to you right now as you say it?
Not at all. Not at all.
It's so obvious. If you're hungry to be out in nature, think how hungry a lot of other people are.
Yeah.
I mean, and when I went to Africa, it's like, wow, lions and tigers and bears. No tigers. No bears either, but lions for sure. I was madly in love with the African bush, and I'm like, dude, I'm turning this into a business opportunity. So, you know, we made these ridiculously elaborate seminars where you have to get all the way to Africa, is the African bush, and we do coaching out there. And it's been, I remember the planning session, we had one person who was like, wait, there's no program for this. There's no institutional guidelines. We can't do this. And the rest of us just looked at her and said, we never do anything in institutional guidelines. And, you know, it was like, I was scared it wouldn't work for a while, and then it just kicked in and is, you know, oversold years in advance now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So, dude, get outside and find the people who want to go outside with you. You're going to have so much fun.
I know that's absolutely true. My daughters have all grown up, and but we spent, oh, I can't tell you how many times, probably three dozen, you know, weekends on canoe trips on rivers and things. And it was really just, you know, it was some of the most joyful time I spent. I hope they think the same thing, but I mean, I've really.
And how many times in your business have you referred to something you learned on a canoe trip and had it be helpful?
All the time.
Constantly.
Yep.
So take a canoe trip with a bunch of guys or women or whatever and tell them, apply that to the rest of their lives.
So in case anybody's listening, these were hypothetical examples. Martha was not actually coaching John Chance here.
No, he's taking a canoe seminar. Everybody send him emails. I tell you, Dan, if you do it, they will come.
Yeah, I know they're.
Field
of
Dreams.
I will. All right, so you heard it here. I've been outed. And I will have to take it forward. So,
closet canoeer.
Tell me what you're most excited about right now.
I'm so thrilled to. I moved to this property in California. I called it a ranch, but it's really just a patch of national forest. And I've been taking people out there and doing horse whispering work and animal tracking and all these different types of experience. And it's almost like a circus where you go in and there are all these different things you can go to change depending on what my coaches and I feel will change people most. And it's like, it's just ridiculously fun.
No, this is this is a place you own, you mean? Okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah. I got so passionate about taking people into nature, and at a certain point, I just got this overwhelming feeling. I need to just own a chunk of nature to keep it safe and to give people these experiences and so that I never have to leave. I came back from a month in the African bush last year to Johannesburg, and I just looked out of the window and I said, I can't do cities anymore.
Yeah.
So beware where these canoe trips will take you, John. But it will be fun.
Well, I think it's time. You know, I don't want to do this forever, so I better get on. That part of it.
Yeah, something's telling you to run outside. Run outside. Yeah. The business will follow you. I promise.
Martha, we have used up all the time that you graciously allotted me. But as always, this was great, and I swear, if I had about 10 more questions, it would be awesome for our listeners. But I definitely appreciate you taking the time. I know you're very, very busy, and I hope maybe I'll end up tracking some animals with you out there in California.
Oh, that would be so great! Yeah, come on out. We will have a blast.
All right, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Take care.